Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Carol Francis Talk Radio Show. Let's make life happen together with authors, scientists, researchers, both inside the box and outside the box of understanding so that you can live a life full of your success, curiosity, enjoyment, happiness, and richness of life in every respect. Let's go beyond our limits, and let's help others go beyond their limits as well. Welcome.
I'm tremendously excited about this interview with John Koenig and about his book called Autobiographies. He has not yet been able to join, so who knows what's going on in the Ethernet world of John's attempt to connect with us, but I have no doubt that he will be here. I'm going to go ahead and start talking about past life regressions. You have joined me, Dr. Carol Francis. I'm a clinical psychologist and author as well. One of my books that does deal with past life regressions is Your Soaring Phoenix, and you might wonderfully enjoy checking that book out. John's book is called Biographies, and for obvious reasons, because he's gone into a dialogue about 14 of his past life regression experiences that have instructed him or given him insight into what's going on. What exactly is past life regression? I know that when people call me up for my practice, they will say, I want to do some work with my past life. And I don't know if that means their childhood, their infancy, their fetal experience, some sort of traumatic event in their current life, or if they're actually informed about what has gone on in some of the worlds of hypnotherapy of going into past lives. But the past life is an interesting process. Now, I have one foot always in the land of the skeptic and one foot in the land of the experiencer. And as an experiencer, it's not so much that I necessarily believe it, but I'm so eager to experience it. And then my belief begins to morph based on whatever it is that I have experienced that seems to be congruent also with the side of me that's skeptical. So one of the questions I will ask John is about fiction versus fact, because that is relevant for understanding past life regression. Now, a colleague of mine, Heather Riviera Friedman, has written a book that was based on dissertation research she did in statistically analyzing individuals who had gone through past life regressions. She wanted to understand what the impact was on an individual's well-being, their mental health. And in exploring their mental health and their well-being, she wanted to know what would improve after a certain number of past life regression experiences. And so after each of those experiences an individual would have, she would have them rate what would be going on. Now, this makes an individual extremely conscious about the value or the lack of value or what the information is with a past life regression. So that in and of itself does skew some of the data. But what is interesting is that after 6 to 8 experiences with past life regression work, it seemed that the individual turned a corner of having a very profound adjustment in their life that allowed them to have a much better sense that their life was worthwhile, less anxiety, less depression, better connected to relationships, and not afraid of death. There were so many other aspects of what she said that she found to be beneficial with past life regression that whether it is fact or fiction, it is definitely boring into your unconscious, and whether your unconscious is housing the DNA of past lives that you specifically have had as a specific soul, or if you're tapping into what goes on universally, and so kind of like in Jungian style, that you tap into the archetypes or the icons that represent something to you specifically that you can use in your current life to grow from. So one way or another, whatever way you look at the value of past lives, that it does exist. Whether you look at past lives as fact or fiction, it does exist as being beneficial. Whether you look at past life as boring into your unconscious or not, it does seem to be beneficial to your conscious way of living. And that is certainly what John Koenig talks about in his books. Well, I've reached out to John. I don't know what's going on in terms of him being able to join us. Usually it's that they're having difficulty with their internet or something has fallen down or some emergency occurred in their life. So I'm incredibly respectful for whatever's going on because John is one of the most reliable, responsible individuals. And so this clearly is a situation that's probably beyond his current control. So we're going to go forward with this. If you have joined this particular by being live, and thank you for those that have, or you're joining this as part of a podcast, if you can put aside anything that you're doing for the next few minutes, I'm going to actually guide you through a past life regression experience. Now, I can't do it the way I would do it in my office or on Zoom because I can't see you, and I don't know what you're going through. So one of the stipulations we're going to put on this is that whatever past life experience you have, it will be interesting and kind and gentle and doable so that we don't want any of the past life experiences that you have to add further trauma. And what's so interesting about my saying of this is that some of us are much more keen on having empathic reactions to what it is we see on television, in movies, remember in our own life than others of us do. And the empathy or the connection you want to have with your past life regression can be completely on an emotional level. And that can be very rich because it adds to the sensorium of what is happening. It adds to your awareness of all the dimensions of what's going on. But at all times, we don't want you to go back and re-traumatize yourself by whatever the past life regression would do. So that is one of the stipulations. So just now, as you close your eyes, I want you to stipulate to yourself that whatever experience you're going to have is going to be for your best and kindest self experience, your ability to be able to be gentle with yourself and also insightful, to be able to learn something that's useful for this current life, and also to be able to just be curious about all the lives surrounding you. Now, what we're doing is we're setting up an intentionality. The intentionality has everything to do with you being able to enter into your unconscious state in a way that kind of provides a map for your unconscious state to also collaborate with your consciousness, with what you want to do. Now, the second level of setting up an intention that I learned from my training in the shamanic world or in the meditation world is to actually have a question that you might be curious about. So let's see. Choose a question that would fit your particular current situation, a curiosity, a ponderment, an issue you'd like to understand better or even have a resolution or a solution for. So go ahead and close your eyes if you haven't already. Lean back safely, obviously, peacefully, as we go through this in the next 10 minutes. So in the next 10 minutes, you are going to set the intention of whatever the question was or the issue was. And I'll just give you a few examples just in case some of you are having a ponderment like, what do you mean or how do I do this? The issues might be, I would like to understand better the conflicts I have in this particular relationship with and then whatever that person is. I would like to have solutions as to my emotional anxiety associated with and then whatever that anxiety might be associated with. I would like to understand the purpose of my life currently as I'm living it. I would like to understand something that relates to an event in my life currently as it, and what lessons currently I should be taking from my current situation as might be revealed in a past life experience. And those are just examples of establishing an intentionality as to what will help you in going into a past life. All right, so with your eyes closed still and you've had set your intention, and if your intention is, oh, I'm just curious, I just am curious, I'm a creative, curious person, that is absolutely sufficient and fine. Now I'm going to use a particular avenue, and that particular avenue is not going to match what yours is because I don't know who you are. But this particular avenue is very functional and usable. I want you to imagine yourself suddenly plopped into the middle of a beautiful forest or field, something where you can sense the trees blowing in the wind, hear the rustling of the leaves as they shift around playfully in the wind. You can look around on the ground and you can see the dirt and the grass, the rocks. And perhaps you're even standing on a trail that's been man-made, so maybe has bricks or concrete on it. I want you to notice whatever flowers exist around you that have different various colors, and if they're moving or standing still, if they're tall or if they're small. Look also to see if you can see any life, such as insects, land crawlers, mammals, any sort of life that's around you, flying birds. Just look around and see if there's any life that's stirring and just enjoy it. This is a peaceful and beautiful place. Now you're going to find yourself on a path, a trail, a road of some sort. And again, look down at your feet and notice what that path or that road or that trail is underneath your feet and begin to just step one step at a time, just walking casually, comfortably, a wonderful, lovely hike that you're going to take that's not strenuous, but is refreshing. And now up above, you're going to see the clearing through the trees is a wonderful cabin. And in that wonderful cabin, you see a patio and it's inviting. And you smell the smells of someone that must be a delicious baker. And you walk into the house, the door is wide open. You are welcome to come in. A sign says, this is your place. So this home, this place, this interesting place is yours. You see beautiful things around you that are very natural. You smell wonderful things around that are very inviting. And you also see a hall off to one of your sides, your left side or your right side. So you move toward that hall because it just seems like a curious place to go, a wonderfully curious place to go. And you notice that it's a long hall with a lot of doors. And all those doors look different, different colors, different shapes, different designs, different materials, different doorknobs. They're all different, but one in particular seems to be really interesting to you. And while you have plenty of time to explore everything behind each of these doors at another time, now we're limited to being able to explore one particular door. So go ahead and choose the door that seems to stand out to you in your most intriguing, curious mind and go up to the door and know that you're going to step into something that is going to be characteristic of maybe one of your past lives, the past representation of you. And so with curiosity and with your intention in mind that you stated earlier, you now hold on to that doorknob, take a deep breath in of excitement and intrigue, and you step inside. And behind you stepping inside, you realize that you are now entering into a past life regression experience. And in that past life regression experience, you are now saying to yourself, oh my goodness, what is this? Now, close the door behind you. Gently look down and see what you can see on your feet. Just describe it to yourself. And what do you see your feet standing upon? Gently move your eyes up farther on your body. See if you notice any sort of clothing. And take stock of what that would be. And now as you go up farther, look at your hands, your chest, and be aware of your hair and ask yourself, okay, I or how? What age do you seem to be? Now, you've kind of taken stock of yourself. Look around and look out around what's going on and see what you experience in this particular space. Now, I can't really guide you in this particular space, but I can ask you to guide yourself out of your curiosity and interest. And don't forget the question, intentionality that you established for yourself. So you look around with that idea of what you wanted to know and say, what here am I experiencing in this moment? And allow yourself to go into it with curiosity, imagination, and ponderment. Curiosity, imagination, ponderment. I'll give you a moment to just experience this particular thing. See the colors, the shapes, the people. Perhaps there's something that indicates the time and the space, the place, the location, and just take in the details to whatever you wish to do. Now, because I have a guest that has just arrived and I'm excited about, I'm going to have you move yourself gently back into the doorway, remembering what little bits you've experienced or big moments you've allowed yourself to have. And then go to the doorknob, knowing you're going to enter back in to the life and time of 2023 and open that doorknob gently, stepping back into the hall. Close the door behind you, remembering your experience. Walk gently and comfortably out of this very inviting cabin. You're welcome to come back at any time. Go back down on the path. See the place that you entered into, this particular spot, and begin to stretch and wake up your eyes and your body, saying yes, yes, yes as you back enter into this space. And I count you back into 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. You can open your eyes and stretch. And I'm going to introduce to you now my guest, John Koenig. Is that you by any wonderful chance? Hello?
It seems to be. Hi.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you here. That gave me an opportunity to walk the guests through a little mini past life regression experience, as you probably heard in the aspect of this. John, welcome so much to the program, author of autobiographies. My first question out the stall is this. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
In your experience of past life regressions, what has been the benefit to your current 2023 self of all the experiences you describe in your autobiographies and beyond? What have been the benefits of doing past life regressions?
Well, you know, generally, I have found that I believe everything happens for a reason. And yet in practical issue, that's kind of difficult sometimes, like being late for this podcast. I was unavoidable. But if I'm like most people, even though I know and I believe everything does happen for a reason, I believe that everything in God's universe is part of a synchronicity of sorts. I'm human, and I get annoyed when things don't go my way. So I'm sure other listeners might identify with that a little bit. I am human, and as far as I know, there's no cure for this. And there is an advantage, though, to understanding that this is temporary, that every life is about a lesson. I mentioned to you, I think that I consider this, and it's in the book certainly, that life is spiritual kindergarten, that we're here. And I've looked at some of your work too, and Ryan, I think you've talked about it as well. Life as spirit school, that we're here learning different things. There are so many, I came into past life work. I always believed there was a powerful, omnipotent, omnipresent deity. Not so much as a concept, but as an experience. But I wasn't that interested in past life work at all. I kind of accepted the possibility that maybe reincarnation was the way things work here. But it was never really a big draw to me until I met somebody whose wife actually was the past life facilitator, and I started my journey. So I think, and Major, to answer your question more succinctly, it's empathy for others. If you have been both the victim and the victimizer, it's a little hard to get all that worked up when somebody seems to be doing things that you don't approve of.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way.
So you're saying that the empathy, you've learned empathy for both sides of the continuum of victim and predator, of prey and predator. You've had empathy for both sides of the equation of that drama.
It takes some of the righteousness out of life. I don't know if any of your listeners are familiar. In this incarnation, I'm approaching my 75th year on this particular planet in spiritual kindergarten. And those who are old enough to remember the old EST training. The EST training was developed by a fellow who called himself Werner Erhard.
Sure.
But his real name was Jack Rosenberg. Mm-hmm. And Jack Rosenberg was Jewish. And he took on the identity, if you will, in his name, of the opposite of Werner Erhard. The idea being that there are two, that both sides participate in whatever drama there is. It's a heady thought. And nonetheless, though, I think that is the way it works here. We're all, I believe, play actors in this drama, that the victim is the victim one day, and the next day, the other way around. One of my lives, for example, that I imagine that I experienced was an SS guard in Poland toward the end of World War II. And that is not how I think of my life at all today. It is and the opposite of how I see things and feel things.
Mm-hmm. I remember hearing, because I listened to the audio of your autobiography, of Autobiographies, the name of your book, and I remember in the tone of your voice and reading that portion of your book, kind of a sense of appall or shame or startle that there you found yourself in his shoes.
It wasn't what I had in mind that day. You know, all of us like to be the good guy. And that's another bit of insight and learning. Everybody's narrative, I think, more or less has us to hear our own little story. So you can be a horrible, horrible perpetrator and feel totally justified. I think everyone does. It's, you know, what is that? It's a Shakespearean life, like all life's a play, right? And we have costumes and we have sets and we have roles. And I believe we choose those before we come here. We pick our parents.
You've made references to a number of words, and I wanted to open that dialogue with you, and that is, you use the word imagination and belief and faith. These words are not what a scientist wants to hear when they're actually exploring something that they hope is going to produce a series of facts. I have my foot in one side of skepticism, where I want the facts, man, nothing but the facts. And the other side of me wants to step into experiences, which do not necessarily rely on facts as much as the subjective experience of whatever's going on. So how do you navigate, before we step into other aspects of past life regressions, how do you navigate the quandary between, is this fact or fiction? Is this my imagination? Is this a conjuring of my unconscious? Is this a product of my DNA? Is this Jungian iconic archetypal stuff at work? Is this my actual soul's journey throughout time and space? How do you navigate the question of, is this fact or fiction?
You know, I was thinking about that a little bit when I thought about today's talk. The truth is, I don't know. And I think that one of my missions here is to be a bridge between this kind of stuff we're talking about and regular people who are fact-based. I truthfully don't know. And I mentioned in my book the work of Ian Stevenson, who started investigating children, little people, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, who had reported experiences of past lives. And in those cases, the kid has no chance. I have no idea, no chance to get contaminated by television, books, movies. I have no idea, truthfully. All I can know for certainty is that for me, each of these experiences was vivid and real and offered me insights into who I am and who I would like to be.
So can you help me understand how his research with children that haven't been modified by prejudices, what is that to do with that question about facts or fiction of past life regressions? I think I missed something.
Yeah, well the little kid, a person, an adult, unless you go back and you actually, like for example, one of my lives that I thought I experienced, I believe, by the way, I did experience them. If push comes to shove, I would say, yes, these were real experiences, was a private in something called the First Continental Dragoons in the 18th century. And there, it turns out there was a regiment like that. It was stationed roughly where I thought that it was. But unless you can go back and do that research, you really can't know. And I think, like you, to a large, I have a skeptical mind, a questioning mind. I have a mind that, like you said, would like the facts, just the facts. So for me to go back and say with absolute conviction that these were real would throw me into belief. And belief is what makes people get all angry with each other. If you believe something without evidence, it creates wars, religion oftentimes. In my family, I have a wife from Northern Ireland whose family was many of them were murdered because they were on the wrong side of a belief structure. So I don't try to push my beliefs on anybody.
So in the process of creating an induction for someone to do a past life regression, and they say, I don't know if this is real or not, how do you help them harness the tools they need in order to be able to step into an experience that they may feel skeptical about prior and maybe after? How do you help them step into the experience? What tools do we possess as human beings that enable us to step into this type of process?
That's a very excellent question.
Thanks.
When you read fiction, you're asked to suspend disbelief. So if you read a book and it's something, you suspend disbelief. You just allow yourself to experience whatever you experience. And so I work very carefully with clients to get them to just experience their experience without, that's right, you're a hypnotist as well. You know that. If a person's analytical mind is judging what's going on during the hypnotic induction, you're not going to get anywhere. So you have to get the client to get out of that judgment mode. A lot of people, a good clear definition of hypnotism generally is bypassing the analytical mind, bypassing the critical factor. So with any kind of regression, you need to do that as well. And I just make sure that I kind of train the client a bit to experience whatever they experience, however improbable it is. A lot of times in a regression, it starts with where are you? What do you see? I was able to catch a little bit of what you were doing, you know, look at your feet and stuff. And sometimes people will get nothing. And you just have them be patient and allow them to let their experience come through. There's definitely, in terms of the art versus science, more of an art to that, I think, to just allow the client, to stay with the client patiently, to allow whatever occurs to occur, no matter how bizarre. And I'll give you an example. I did this regression once with somebody, one of the early ones that I did with a practitioner for myself, and I found myself basically experiencing life as a bug. And I'm kind of, you know, and I remember, and this is a characteristic of regression generally, is you see things that don't make sense at first. And I'm walking along as a bug, and I see this large dome, this clear dome, and I don't know what that is. So instead of saying to myself, this can't be, I just stayed with it, and I discovered it was a drop of water. And I realized that the tensile strength of the water was holding the drop of water as a dome, just to allow whatever is there to be there, and then to reveal what comes next.
So in the fancifulness of it, it's going to be a lot easier with people who use their imagination. They're in that creative mode as well. Do you find that people in a state of anxiety or depression are more or less capable of benefiting from the experience they have as a past life regression in terms of being able to reduce the cause or the issues of their depression or anxiety or stress or trauma?
my. Yeah. Oftentimes somebody with anxiety, well, first of all, will be able to go more deeply, more quickly into hypnotism. I teach hypnotism. I do a certification course, and I had a student come once, and he wanted to do work with trauma victims, and it's very effective. If somebody is in horrible pain, they've been in a car accident, and an EMT comes along, they're so open to get out of their pain that they're willing to go very quickly into an experience. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that works. If somebody is suffering so much, and that's what brought them to the experience, oftentimes they're very, very open and receptive for anything that will give them relief.
Okay, so I could ask you a million questions, and I was so looking forward to this entire dialogue. And one of the aspects of it is that I find that your writings, your thoughts, the interviews that I've listened to from you on YouTube, et cetera, they're full of all this breadth of experience, of philosophy. So now I'm going to walk you into a philosophical point of view. In the philosophical point of view of what makes a human, what do you discover about past life experiences or the process that you take clients through? What makes a human in the context of reincarnation, past life regression, and experiences of that nature? What makes a human? Bigger, different question.
Okay. As distinct from a puppy dog?
As distinct from anything, just anything at all. It is go ahead, because you mentioned that.
I'll start with a living being.
Okay.
I've heard it said often that God is either everything or nothing. And I subscribe to the view that deity, whatever it is that creates all this, is within all this, that God is within creation. And I think God's dilemma to a degree is that God can't experience itself, because God is just, pure energy, whatever it is, has no sense organs. So living beings give God a different way to experience itself. Human beings, not only do we have the senses, we see creation, we see deity. Everywhere you look, if you look around whatever room your listener is in, I look around and I see the presence of deity, because I'm outside of it, if you will. God being its inside of it. So humanity, creation, all living beings are outside of it. Human beings with analytical ability, intelligence, have the ability to co-create. I think God is about stories, and we make stories up. We have dramas. And I think God enjoys that. And then, by the way, I believe that language is absolutely inadequate to discuss these things and come to any real appreciation. How do you? I was reading one of your things. You talked about the ocean. How do you communicate a sense of the immensity, the absolute immensity, complexity, intricacy, incredible mosaic of patterns of events, microscopic, subatomic? How do you communicate that in a word? The answer is you can't. And any kind of language, I think, makes God small, tries to reduce it to something that humans can understand.
So then if a human being goes back and has past life regressions and can become a Kafka-esque a bug or an inanimate object that we would think is an animal object, like a plant or a rock, for example, this human being is therefore essentially what that allows that human being to experience this past life manifestation.
Well, by the way, I would not say a rock. A rock isn't. It's living things that are outside of that. I think God loves being a rock. and rain, thunderstorms and planets and supernovas and things. Living things have a separate identity, separate from God. We're part of God, I believe, created by God, and God's within us, but outside of it. Humanity, incarnation on planet Earth, I believe we go out after we die to someplace, and we kind of design what we need to learn as a soul. And then we come into this incarnation. I don't think rocks do that. I know they don't. I don't believe that they do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you use the pivotal word called soul. And now, do you believe that this soul can choose the next life? And if your soul, I'm going to pick on you, John, your soul specifically, okay, said, you know, what we learned in this life in 2023, we need to transmit this learning experience forward into the next incarnation and the next progression, the next evolution of who you are. What do you think this life has in it that you want to propel forward that will evolve you as a soul in the next life? And what do you think your next life will help you resolve about this life?
That's a tough one. I honestly think that if we spend a lot of time talking together, we got to know each other, you could probably tell me better than I could tell myself. I believe, you know, I'm in the middle of this incarnation. I'm not quite sure what my lessons are going to be. I do know that when we die, as we die, people talk about how your life flashes before you. And I believe that is what occurs. And you end, like in this incarnation, for example, one of my prior experiences was as the wife of my current wife. And in that incarnation, I couldn't get my husband, my wife in this life, to listen to me. We were in a village. I knew that it was in Russia at some point. I knew that the Cossacks were going to come. They were going to take all the men from the village. I heard it when I was in the village talking to the other women, and I tried to get him, and I loved him in that life, and I tried to get him to pay attention, to flee, and I couldn't get him to listen to me. So that life ends, even though she in that life, because they did come and they did take him, and he couldn't get her to listen. That life ended with this profound sense of wanting to be listened to, you know, wanting to be heard. It was like a scream of consciousness as she died. And so in this life, I'm born with this desire to be heard. And, you know, all the things I've done in this life, you know, I was an ad guy, a college teacher, a hypnotist, for God's sake. Yeah, and you know what it's like when you're a hypnotist. You do all the talking, and the client at some point just sits there. So at this point, I've been a chatterer, in this life, a chatterer. So that's with that life. But if I was in the middle of that life, I couldn't have told you what my major, you know, lesson was going to be. Not at the time, at least. I think you got to kind of die to figure that one out. That's my thought, at least.
You know, now that we're in this information intense era, entering into artificial intelligence and all that's going to have for us, it's going to be an interesting time ahead of us in that regard. It does strike me that human beings have an opportunity to be much more conscious and deliberate about everything. What I do today will cause this. What I eat today will cause that. What I think in this results in these biochemical changes in my body. I mean, we're almost inundated with the realization that we're really manifesting from minute to minute, and therefore really can stand up or be suffocated by the idea of our own personal responsibility for creating and affecting our life the way we would like it to be, to the best of our ability, to the best of our influence. And so it does make me wonder to what degree if we're thinking about the power of our past lives, and then we project ourselves into our future life in terms of our own imagination, and then maybe we do or don't believe in a linear timetable because, you know, time travel is a whole other thing. But it seems to me that we actually have an opportunity to sculpture our future, not only in this life, but in those to come. And I just wonder to what degree, if we take charge of that in the wisdom of our current life and in the folly of our current understanding, can we create a better future, not only in 2023 or whatever, but also in these future lives that we can anticipate living if we've also been able to take a peek into the lives we've had in the past. So now, in light of that little statement, what are you thinking?
I never had that thought expressed to me before. It's a fascinating idea. I got a feeling that there's no cure to being human. Mm-hmm. I think we have to go through what we have to go through. Mm-hmm. You wonder, like, why, if you believe that we choose our life, mm-hmm. which I do, if you believe that you choose your circumstance, why would somebody choose a horrific life? Mm-hmm. Why would somebody come back and choose to be born with some horrible birth defect, or born to some horrific, you know, why would you choose to be born, say, I mentioned the Holocaust before, you know, Jewish in Germany in 1928, why would you choose that? And the answer is you need to learn something. So it depends on what you're up to, you know, how big a lesson you're willing to sign up for. Sometimes I imagine there are other planets somewhere, other dimensions that people or souls incarnate that could be a lot less demanding than planet Earth. I can picture, like, they call it the bardo, I guess, in Tibetan Buddhism. Somebody's saying, well, I'm thinking about an incarnation on planet Earth. And somebody's saying, Earth? You must be kidding. That's a terrible, terrible spiritual school. All kinds of bad stuff happens down there. So I don't necessarily, I've heard a lot of people think that, I've worked with a few people who are convinced this is their last incarnation, that they have learned all they need to learn. And I don't think that that's made, I don't think it's a problem, by the way, that we choose lives of adversity in this spiritual school. And I think that's just how we evolve. And I belong to this reincarnation group, and I was this was fascinating to me. I was down at one of the convention they had, and one of the guest speakers in the convention, and it was a medium was speaking, a medium, and I think you do medium work, I think, and. So one of the speakers was Dolores Cannon, who was a very notable person in reincarnation writings. Mm-hmm. Now, Dolores Cannon physically left this plane about 20 years ago, but Dolores Cannon's spirit came through and was, you know, talking to the group. I thought that was, I loved it. It was fascinating.
No kidding.
I asked Dolores Cannon through the medium, I said, are you coming back? And Dolores Cannon, through the medium, began to laugh and said, I'm going to wait a while. You know, I'm going to wait a while before deciding to come back. You know, sort of rest up a little bit, process. There's a reincarnation Facebook group I belong to, and I had to chuckle. Somebody posted a few weeks ago, I don't care what anybody says, I ain't coming back. It's tough here. Everything here is about limitation. Everything. You know, that's why we choose spiritual school, I think. You know, to breathe is effortful. In spirit, everything is effortless, I believe. You know, you just think it, you experience it, maybe you can create it. But here, everything is struggle, literally. Like me struggling to get to our podcast on time. and
so sorry.
Well, that's, you know, it is what it is. And and I found that that perspective, as I was struggling to get through traffic without a cell phone, I was thinking, it is what it is. It's all in divine order. And that perspective, if that's something a person gets out of past life work, the idea that it's not about necessarily are you winning or losing at getting what you think you want in this life. It's about something else entirely, a whole different set of metrics about what's meaningful in life, learning. You know, the person who dies with the most toys does not win. It's just not so. And yet we live as if it's like that. Most of us, most of the time, myself included, live as if this is it. And you judge your winning or losing by how well you're getting what you want in life. That old Rolling Stones song, you can't always get what you want, but you can get what you need sometimes. And I believe that is so in the spiritual school here. We get what we need.
So interesting. So now if you were to take your idea that you're getting what you need, we're learning our lessons, we're in human kindergarten in terms of our souls, and now we have this magnificent tool called past life regression, which actually is not new to our particular era, because there's many faiths long ago that have, talking about the, we would have an interesting conversation about what faiths or belief systems you've explored and what their doctrines, like our Bible or the Quran or so forth and so on, talk about reincarnation and past lives. So we could have a great conversation on that. So maybe you want to choose that topic instead of the next one that I was going to pull out of the hat, and that's this. You have this book called Autobiography, and it is, I call, 14 different experiences that you delineate in detail. If you were to take this portion of your life at age 75, by the way, congratulations, I'm about to enter into my 70s. So excited, right? So if you were to take these 14 lives and you were to sit still into your own moment in this present experience, and have a conference table discussion with all of these 14 lives, could you actually kind of personify the message they would give you that would be profound in this moment of your life, this year, this period of time? Could you hear what the Nazi soldier would say? Could you hear what the wife in Russia could say to you? Say, John, in this moment, what we want you to learn from the experience I shared with you in that past life regression is, can you hear the nuggets that they might want to put at your feet in this moment? And if so, can you share it with us?
Yeah, I closed my eyes when you said that and kind of tried to picture the round table. Some of them were stuck in their own hurt and wouldn't have good things to say. But those of them that were the ones who were doing the best in life, my shaman, Lena, the wife of that Russian blacksmith. The message was, first, you're going to be okay. You really are going to be okay. And not only that, what I got was, what's next is going to be magnificent. And that's a nice little message for me. I have a lot of adversity. And it's interesting, by the way, I've got a lot, I'm not going to go into it right now, I got a lot of stuff on my plate, a lot of stuff that anybody would look at objectively, and I've had people look at it and say, you know, how do you go on? My wife has major health problems.
I'm sorry.
And yet, I'm okay. And but what I've come to realize in my recent learning about life is everybody in spiritual kindergarten has stuff. I am far from unique. Everybody has their own stuff. Nobody gets out of this unscathed. Mm-hmm. And yet, I believe I chose it. I chose this incarnation. I chose this. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a message for, the message that came to me can be for everybody. You're going to be okay. You really are going to be okay. This too will pass, as they say. And what's next is going to be magnificent.
What a promise, right? How delicious
is
that?
It is pretty cool.
And when you say, and what's next is going to be magnificent, are you referring the space between the lives, united in the afterlife, or are you talking about the next life and incarnation? What do you think that's referencing?
Well, what came to my mind is I know you participated in something called the Phoenix, I think, a book, of a compilation of different writers talking about it. I think in spiritual evolution, you know, they say when the student is ready, the teacher will arrive. I think when the teacher is ready, a whole new domain opens up. I think this particular teacher, I think I'm ready. I think I paid enough dues to begin to. And by the way, a lot of that has to do with self-acceptance. I don't know about everybody. Well, I kind of do. I think most of us are more or less like me. And I make that point very clearly. I'm an ordinary, regular person. There's things that are unique about me, but, I got to say in the book, I'm not even particularly evolved spiritually, I don't think. Mm-hmm. But I have taken on a role of teaching and guiding and supporting and coaching. And to accept myself as I am, with my shortcomings and those parts of me that are beautiful, I've reached the point where I can do that. I'm okay
beautiful.
With being me.
Wonderful, yeah. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. And that is a state of its own internal bliss, isn't it? When your relationship with you kind of gels in that acceptance. Excuse me, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to just, I was just muttering. agreeing with you. And to accept, it's not necessarily easy. And of course, there are still parts of me I would like to be different. But generally, I accept me exactly as I am. One of the things I say to clients sometimes in hypnosis is it's okay to be you precisely as you are and also as you're becoming. And I think that applies universally. It's okay to be you. People often think that their stuff is the worst possible stuff on the planet. And I'm no exception. But yeah, we all have stuff. And if you accept your stuff, and begin even to see beauty in it, to accept yourself exactly as you are, and then allow who you're going to become to be.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, so now I'm going to step you into another idea that I had brewing, and that is in the profoundness of being human, being human or being a soul, because in past lives you're saying that we could be all sorts of things other than human. And the profoundness of being human. Pardon me?
Some people who write about this disagree.
Okay.
Some people who write about this say you never become anything other than human. But I have had the experience at one time of being a bug. And I've come across other people who are past life explorers who also have those experiences. I've had, I've never had the experience of being in a different planet. But I know some people who go do past life work do. But certainly working with people that I've worked with, no one has done that. Everyone has always been a human. Anyway, I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Well, I love it. That's great. That's wonderful. That's what a dialogue is. So no worries. And so if we're entering into this, we're coming out of this information-based world, and we've moved into fake news. Fake information now is something we have to sift through. And I think that's all very relevant because before we were really taken at all with all this information, knowledge base, what we could learn, what we could understand, what we could create out of our understanding. And I think we're entering into this totally different world that has AI in it. And AI is a compilation of all this knowledge, whether it's fact or fiction, and manifested through the machinations that we create in robots, for example. And I'm just wondering what you think is the future of humanity, given the value of our soul, as we watch ourselves create the AI that we all fear will destroy us. I don't know if we all fear it, but often, I mean, that's often what's there intrinsic in talking about AI. So artificial intelligence and robots and such of that nature. What do you think is essentially the value of our soul that may deal with or supersede or manifest through our creation of a robot that might be eventually smarter and more effective than we are as humans?
Again, a fascinating thought. And my best take on that is, first off, all evolution has been slow, biological. Creatures, you know, respond to challenges and they evolve organically over time. What's happened to humanity is we've created, because our intelligence is machines, human beings have evolved to the point where we can fly, have evolved to the point you and I can talk over 3,000 miles difference. We've evolved like that mechanically. And AI is part of that type of evolution that's going far, 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 far faster, in my opinion, than spiritual evolution. Mm-hmm. So we're better at doing things, at manipulating reality, than we are evolving spiritually. Spiritual evolution, for example, you get the idea of an ideal human, and you might use Buddha, Jesus Christ, any kind of Mother Teresa for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
Humans who are beautifully evolved, who are filled with love and compassion, mm-hmm. and communicate with deity as almost, if not co-creators. So that track of evolution is one track. And the other track is the idea that they may start putting AI-type devices in our brains to improve, to make us smarter.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, I would say, give me that. I would love to have that.
All right, line up your Elon Musk. All right. Yeah.
I love AI. I love chatbot. You know, I will ask chatbot all kinds of questions and use it as a tool. So, but that will never be conscious the way we are. Soul, in my mind, is consciousness. Mm-hmm. So I would think that we all know that the beautiful research that trees and plants communicate with each other. That there's, I believe, an awareness they have, a consciousness that they have. AI is never going to have that. But these are like extensions, and that's fascinating. But it's a different track, and in my mind, far, far, far less important than growing as a soul to be in more intimate communication with deity, to be more part of a co-creator with whatever is that creates all this stuff, God, as we understand it.
It's interesting idea to ponder that if God created us, did God fear that we would destroy her, and as we've created AI and robots, et cetera, and we live in fear that our creation will destroy us. It's just an interesting, like, how are we passing on an experience of, well, that which is magnificently created by us is going to destroy us because we become inadequate, relatively speaking. And yet I kind of wonder what in the human being is surpassing that we have minimized. And so in your past life regressions, have there been any individuals that have been so profoundly evolved or spiritual that have given you these insights into just how expansive we are, and ergo, how expansive we could actually be living. Any thoughts or ponderments about that?
Carol, I wish I had had some of those. I think that I felt drawn to write this book. This book almost, like they say, wrote itself.
And I'm so glad you did. I loved your book. It was great. Yeah.
I'm not that evolved. I wish I had one of these great lives. I just didn't. You know, my favorite by far past life was an African shaman. And he was a beautiful, beautiful character. I used AI, by the way, to create a picture of what I thought he looked like. And
oh,
I
wow.
Hanging it in my bedroom.
Uh-huh.
He was so beautiful. He lived in questions. He did all of his rituals perfectly, meticulously, but he had no idea, really, was a cure something he did or just something that occurred. That's the best I got in my past lives.
Mm-hmm.
And when I urge people to experience their past lives, yeah, it's possible with you. I don't know if you've actually done that work, Carol, with yourself
or
not.
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, absolutely, yes.
I mean, have you got any of those that were evolved to that level?
Boy, I need to reflect on my own questions. And personally, let me think. It's been, I don't know. Can I get back to you on another program on that one? Let me think that one through.
Yeah, that's
a really great question.
I wish I had one of those. Each of the lives were personal to me. And you know, I'm just, like I said, I'm a struggler, but I'm also a questioner.
Mm-hmm.
I was born with this questioning mind, and I thank my shaman for that.
Mm-hmm.
To live inside of the questions,
mm-hmm.
You know, the fellow I mentioned before, Werner Erhard, born Jack Rosenberg, said,
mm-hmm.
And I thought it was very accurate, that a person's experience in life is defined by the questions they live within.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided to live in the question, what would it be like for a world that worked for everybody?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fascinating.
That's a great question. Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful mm-hmm. question.
Mm-hmm.
The question I guess, live in is how can, what is it like to live life knowing that we are in spirit school?
Mm-hmm.
And how can I help other people to grow as a teacher in spirit school?
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that the best teacher is always the best student or the most earnest student.
Mm-hmm. That's one of those profound questions, isn't it?
I think it's
profound,
it's a pretty good question.
Yeah. That's a beautiful guidance into, okay, I'm here to learn. All this is a learning experience that's both comforting and arouses the curiosity and makes the flow through a moment much different than if you're feeling persecuted relentlessly and cruelly by some awful God. Go ahead.
I just bounced back to another one of your questions and
mm-hmm.
About human. I have lived inside the question, what is it to be human, my whole life?
Mm.
And I have, since I was a little kid, it's kind of like I felt like I was born, and all this stuff that was aimed at me, I would always, really, is that so? How do you know that? Is that real? And I'm still that at my advanced age.
Your advanced age. Yeah, I'm going to talk to you when you're 95 and say, boy, I was so naive at 75. Are you really?
Well, you know, when you get to my age,
your wisdom will accumulate vastly. Excuse me?
I found myself talking about somebody who was like 50, and I referred to him as a kid. I said, oh, my God, I'm saying that about a guy that's 50.
Exactly my point. Well, it's been delightful talking to you. I'm so glad you were able to arrive. I was at peace either way. I completely trust your reliability and your conscientiousness. I had no worries about that. And just was hoping that you were safe and good and and knowing that the space would be here for you. So in closing, I'd love you to pitch your book and tell the listeners something that's still burning in your chest that I didn't quite get out of you.
Let's see here. Well, my book is called My Autobiographies, An Introduction to Past Life, Exploration of Personal and Spiritual Growth. And it includes 14 lives. It includes a lot of narrative, but it also includes some, I call them screams of consciousness. And if we have time, I'd like to end with reading one of those, if there's time for that.
Absolutely. Go for it.
This is the final one. It's called Our Autobiographies, Yours and Mine. If all the world is a stage, and you and I the cast, who watches the show? God? Our higher selves? Our souls? Or are these dramas simply stored on forgotten shelves, forever unread, forever unseen, perhaps not even by ourselves, until old age finds us musing, yes, this was me. I lived an amazing dream now coming to an end. Is that all there is? Tales told by myself, to myself, and no one, nothing, empty and meaningless, like a play performed in a theater where all the seats are empty. Or do you and I play a role in this great epic with the divine audience in rapt attention to every twist and turn of our plots? A series of never-ending beginnings, each a step closer to transcendence, the divine, something at stake of far more significance than any life, success, failure, sadness, grief, or joy. So I choose to believe and invite you, dear reader, to join me in this magical quest to be not your mind or your body, but a soul witnessing divinity growing, infinite unfolding, becoming one with whatever creates this universe, the cosmic observer, the universal creator, master storyteller, that which creates this before the beginning, past the end, always present, when we found and then refound over and over again, joylessly, rediscovering and rediscovered within. And that's my pitch.
Oh, gosh, that's wonderful. And folks, I really recommend that you get this book. And I actually said that I read the book, and then I was curious about what it would feel like to have it read to me. So folks, this is also on Audible, and John reads it himself. And it is quite a moving experience to have John actually talking to you about his words and his experience and his life, because you have such pathos, John, when you read your own book on Audible. It's very, very well done.
Thank you.
Folks, the book title again is, John?
My Autobiographies, an introduction to Past Life Exploration for Personal and Spiritual Growth.
Mm-hmm. Well, folks, I hope you have been expanded as you discover that there are hidden treasures inside your unconscious, and that John has steered you closer to the curiosity about who you are through possibly being examined through past life regression as one of many tools available to you to expand who you are. John, thank you so much for showing up for us, for writing your book, and just for being you.
And thank you, Carol. I listened to your podcast, and you're doing a wonderful, wonderful job. So thank you for these years.
Oh, well, thank you very much. You take care. I look forward to our next dialogue. Cheers, everybody.
Be well.